Did you hear about our fundraiser?
You were telling me that it went pretty well. This is the first time you did that, right?
Well, it's the second time.
Oh.
But it was 7 years ago when we first did our first one. And this one was actually much more organized in many ways. Of course, you have a few bumps along the road, but overall, it went pretty good. We had a couple hundred people show up. We had newspaper coverage. We had lots of kids. They came, and it really was a delight working with them.
Now, you told me
nothing like taking five little kids into fairyland, whispering to the fairies while they're feeding them honey.
You told me some of these kids.
What were you going to say?
You told me some of these kids you felt maybe came from some pretty tough situations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, along with working with the kids, these kids are, they're wounded in some ways, but they're very gifted, too. So it's the unique combination of a very conscious child who comes in with deep wounds that's here to change our society, but unless you deal with their consciousness and their wound, you're not supporting the whole child. And we had quite a few kids who had been sexually abused. We had a child who had been abducted. We had other kids that had been hit, and their spirits had been crushed. Mm-hmm. And these kids, they all came together. And it was wild to see them interact with each other. We played this game that was a treasure hunt, and the rules of the treasure hunt were they had to work together as a team, and nobody could go on to the next step to find the treasure until everybody had completed all the exercises together. So no one could leave anyone behind, and it was wild because I saw them. When they would go from one station to another, they would run and they would wait as a team. And I had them dance around a maypole, and they had to sing a song they all agreed on and knew together. And it was wild. And then at the end, after they completed all the tasks, they had bonded. And when they opened the treasure chest, and it was filled with toys and candy and all kinds of stuff, all of them stood around and just looked in there. It was like they were mesmerized.
Mm.
And one of them got the courage up to say to me, "Are we allowed to have a toy?"
Yeah.
It was just like it blew me away because they were so into the exercise. It didn't dawn on them that they were going to get an award at the end,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
So it was very sweet. And, of course, they got a bag of goodies. But they're amazing, and I worked with a little guy yesterday who came in and told me his sad tale about his dad just about strangling him, and he's barely seven, and he's trying to figure out how to protect himself.
Wow.
So that brings the feeling and the desire for safe houses for our kids. Every time I see them, that's the message they bring. So... But anyway,
so yeah. You had a really good event, and you raised some money, and you got to meet some people, and you got those people to connect with others. Who knows? Maybe they'll make some long friendships out of that.
Well, I think that'll happen, but they're already asking about the next event, and there was a lot of support given to the organization and the kids specifically. And now people are starting to come in that could potentially help us with the safe houses. And the kids are here to work together. So I think bringing them together is a big piece of the puzzle, too. So anyway.
Good job, Joy.
It was marvelous.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That's really awesome.
And I want to tell everyone, too, and I think you know about this, we have Monday's Mastery Manifesting Call, where for 15 minutes, Soul Support Systems board members come on the call and they support people with offering a free exercise and how to manifest the life you want to live. If anyone's interested in getting on the call, the number is 605 562 3131, and the access code is 636-883#. And I feel like since we're talking about soul support systems, I also want to let everyone know that on August 18th at the Isis Cove community, it's a full moon sanctuary. There's going to be work done with the heart of Mary Magdalene. Flo Aivia Magdalena is going to be working with the Magdalene stream, which helps to catalyst people to live their purpose. So that is August 18th, and she's going to be doing, it looks like, the same thing again on August 19th at Crystal Visions in Henderson, North Carolina. And as I said, that's the heart of Mary Magdalene's work. And then on August 20th to the 21st, there's going to be soul recognition and facilitator training at the Light Center Lodge in Black Mountain, North Carolina. So Wednesday, the 20th of August, to Sunday, the 24th, is one process, or you could try Thursday the 28th to September 1st. So those are some of the events, and if anyone's interested in more info, Soul Support Systems has a website you can access by going to soulsupportsystems.org, and it's listed there on our website. So just thought I'd give people an update on some things that are pretty profound and amazing that are happening with working with the soul.
Also,
isn't that exciting?
Mm-hmm. And also, yes. There's going to be an event going on in Rapid River at the Dale Thomas Center with our very own Joy of Union, Melchizedek. And then you and Roslyn.
Wow.
You and Roslyn.
Yes.
Are going to tag team. It's tag team Jello Wrestling if you want to get your tickets. No, it's not that. We're going to have a special night for people if they want to come to this. And it's only $25. Mm-hmm. And the Dale Thomas Center, those of you listening, some of you are listening all over different parts of the world, well, then don't worry about it. But if you're listening in Michigan, it's in Rapid River right next to the Hillcrest Motel. And I think we called it Messengers of the Heart,
mm-hmm.
where the two of you are going. What are you going to be doing exactly? How does that, what are you going to, when people show
we
up?
We are going to be doing a bit of readings for the group. So what we do is we tune into the group and go where we're led. And Rosalind and I worked together before. It's always delightful. So you'll have two of us work in the room to give you information and support that your soul may need at this time.
So is it like...
We're delighted, honored, and very excited to do this with you.
So it's going to be at 6:30, August 23rd, a Saturday. We're still a ways away from that, but we might as well throw that out there now. So.
Yes, indeedy. We're a ways away, but it's coming up soon.
Right.
I'm so excited. My trip is coming up.
Yeah, and your trip to Michigan is coming up right around that time, so... Makes a lot of sense to have you do that. If we decide to book that when you weren't here, that wouldn't work out so well. So that's why we did that.
Yeah. No, I think it might be a little tricky. But
anyway.
So, yes. Now, today, I have decided that since you haven't done this yet, what do you think? It's time for you to come out and let us interview you, as the ones with no names would say. Spirit, me, the angels will all interview you today.
Sure, if that's what you want to do.
Okay.
I guess I'm game for it. I got a little bit of a cold.
I'm excited.
My head's a little bit stuffy
now
today.
It's official.
Is it?
So, TJ, would you tell us a little about where you were born and what your interests were as a child? What were you really, really passionate about as a child?
I was born in a town called Iron Mountain, Michigan, which is about 50 miles from where I live right now. And I grew up in a town called Norway, which was a couple miles, about 7 miles outside of Fire Mountain. It's inland, away from the Great Lakes in Michigan, you know, Upper Michigan. Everybody thinks Upper Michigan, all the, you know, we live along either Lake Superior or Lake Michigan, but no, this was quite a ways inland. Different energy, too, in that area, because it's just so, I love the energy of living near the Great Lakes, you know. It really affects you. Didn't feel that so much as a kid, but living out in the country was really a good feeling for me, where we did. And when I, as a child, I was just this type of person that had this love in my heart for everybody as a little, and I think we all do as children, don't you think, Joy? And
I think most of the time, yes. Unless you're wounded, that's true. Yeah.
So,
but I'd like to hear about you and little Tejas.
Little Tejas was the type of child that his eyes were wide open, and every new experience was exciting to him, and kind of like a wow. And then also little Tejas, when he met somebody new, he just had this love in his heart, and he wanted to get to know them. Now, he probably was to the point of pestering people, you know, because he had this feeling of, we're all connected. Little Tejas knew at that age that we're all connected, and he wanted to connect with others, and sometimes to the point of being annoying, probably. Go away, little Tejas. So, no, it was just amazing how I remember that feeling that I had as a child, this love in my heart for everybody I met.
So it's like you actually started interviewing people when you were little.
I don't know if I really did too many interviews with people, but I certainly connected with them, yeah. And I wanted to be around them. And I wanted to just, I don't know, what I was drawn to them, their spirit.
Yeah. Yeah. So being drawn to them like that, right? And you said that sometimes you thought you might have been irritating. Do you think that that feeling that you had as a little child just kind of kept following you, just stayed with you?
For most of my life, yes. Right. I think there were times that it went away and then it came back. You know, as a young guy, it's not considered cool to be emotional, and I was an emotional child and sensitive. So somewhere along the way in school, you kind of bury that away from about, I don't know, maybe the seventh grade on to young adulthood, and you try to act more like a macho guy, you know, so to fit in. And not macho, but I mean, you don't want to be like the, he's the pansy of the group, this guy, you know, look at him, he's all sensitive. And it's like, so I wasn't as at peace with myself as I am now. I don't care what people think, but back then, I tried to fit in. You know, I think a lot of us did. And I wasn't, I changed who I really was. And over time, I've slowly become back again who I was at when I was younger. And a lot of that has to do with I stopped watching, I think TV and movies have a huge effect on us. They really do shift our perception, and they also, we kind of become whatever it is we watch. And I was desensitized, not that I would go hurt somebody or anything like that, but, you know, I could watch a movie and there would be violence and it was not a big deal. And it was only in the last number of years that I stopped doing that, and I no longer can watch those kind of things because it just bothers me. And I think it's because I've become sensitive again, truly sensitive to feeling things and seeing things as they are and not having it disguised by watching it over and over again. Does that answer your question?
So, in that process, right, with the sensitizing, resensitizing yourself and everything, what have you noticed that has come into your life that's been different in that process?
What has come into my life? Well, joy. Joyous one has come into my life. How about that for an answer? You've come into it.
Aww.
A lot of good things have come into it. It seems like I've drawn more in that seems to fit with that vibration. So I've gotten to know a lot of people, and you know my story, in the last year especially, how things have really changed for me.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's not like I've been embracing this for quite a while now, but it's just maybe I've been embracing it more ever since I started talking to you. Well, a lot of that change happened, too, when we started doing some heart threads. Remember last Was it?
Yes.
It was a year last year in the fall. We started doing some
I
of those,
so.
And then I noticed.
Did you feel like it raised your frequency?
Something like that. Yes. You raised my vibration. No question.
Yeah. So do you think maybe it wasn't even so much the TV, but the choice that you made surrounding the behavior that your soul said, well, you know, I'm ready for this next jump and I'm tired of distracting myself.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, that's certainly as part of it. But I also do think we get programmed while we're here. And mm-hmm. and I really believe it's deliberately done to keep us from waking up. And so it's easy to fall into that, you know, and the thing that we have to do is, if we want to change, is maybe turn that TV off or find something on the mm-hmm. on the nature channel or whatever that makes you feel good. Because there's nothing wrong, I think, with watching TV if it makes you feel good about something.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
getting out in nature is probably the best thing you can do to begin with. Just getting out there, and as far as I'm concerned.
Now, when you're out in nature, I hear you talk about nature a lot. And what is it? What's your personal effect? I mean, how does being in nature affect you personally? That you seem to go and recharge. Like when I listen to you talk about being out in nature, I notice you recharge. But you know, specifically, what do you notice that how? In what way do you find yourself recharged, is what I'm trying to say. How are you nurtured by nature?
I am more at peace about things. Things do not bother me like they would. Sometimes they pile up on you when you're stressed out or you see things that happen on the world stage and they kind of ruffle your feathers a little bit. You say, well, why does this have to happen? Because it's part of, you know, we know it's part of a bigger picture. And there's always a reason mm-hmm. to it. But it's easy to get caught up in that as well. And so when I get out, like I was kayaking on this one river that goes about 7 miles back in the middle of nowhere. And when I got done with that, I thought, you know what? I don't really care about anything. It's all fine. It's all good. And when I go out in my yard and I spend some time out there, maybe I work the whole day out in my yard, it's like, I don't care. It's all good. And so mm-hmm. it's that natural energy that we're absorbing, I'm guessing, you know, being grounded.
So you balance.
Right.
The balance.
The balance.
The ground.
Yep. That part of it is what. Yeah. And if it's been calling me for so long, it's funny because when I first, you know, I lived in town for a long time. And every once in a while on the way home, I would stop. And my, you know, I would visit my mom on the weekend and my son. And she lived out in the country. And I always liked that. And then on the way home, I would start, I'd stop at the wayside. And then, you know, it's on the, kind of in the country. You know, it's pretty sparse up here. And then I would eventually start camping. And I just felt the urge to do those things more and more. And it's like my soul was calling me, you need to return to the country. And mm-hmm. now that I live in the country, I don't have the urge to go camping. It's like, I'm already here. I don't need to. I can see all this stuff.
Right, I hear you. I like to say I like to camp at the Hilton. You know?
Yeah, it's a lot more convenient,
but
right?
I love nature, too. Yes.
You don't like the bugs, I'm guessing. Do you like the bugs at all, Joy?
Well, I there was a time when I used to take the kids camping and everything, but I think I'm like, at this point, I love nature. I will go in nature, and I love the water. I love sailing. I love boats, that kind of thing. But at this point, I find great comfort in comfort.
Right.
You know, with traveling and that kind of thing. If camping's going to be hard on me, I'd prefer a hotel. But I always need some link to nature because I, too, have a strong connection, obviously. You know, when you channel Gaia, you tend to do that. But I just find that, particularly when I'm traveling, it's hotels. But I have a question about you with nature when you're out there. Do you hear the nature spirits when you're out there working the yard?
I don't know about that.
Have you ever?
What would they be saying? What are you doing over there? T teaches.
No.
Don't cut the grass so short. Stop
it. I got this image of you working in nature, and I know how you notice everything. I mean, I've seen the shows that you do and the beings that you wonder if they're traveling through or anything, and I'm wondering if you're hearing them when you're out there. Do you ever find yourself responding to things intuitively when you're planning things or anything like that?
I guess so. I mean, it's certainly, I'd have to think about that.
Yeah.
I'm sure I am.
Yeah.
But I can't think of anything
I think
right
so.
Now. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and you said they come to your house too, right? Have you had any company lately?
I've had some strange noises lately. And then I had that whispering outside my bedroom window. Remember I told you about that?
Yeah, that was a while ago, wasn't it?
That was maybe a couple months ago. Something sounded like it
was...
Why
didn't you tell everyone about that?
I was just half asleep in bed, and I would know I was still partially awake, and I was rolling around and flipping around like I normally do, and on my side, and then on my back, and I heard, and my window's always open, and I like to leave it open in the summer, get some cool air and fresh air in. And I heard a voice say, "Is either no more or show me more." And of course, you know, this is the kind of the funny part of the story is that I tend to sleep in the raw, in the buff, you know. And so when somebody says, "Show me more," and of course I'm lying on top of the covers, I'm thinking, there ain't much more to show. And I thought, well, somebody's outside my window, one of my neighbors, and pulling a prank.
Uh-huh.
But you'd have to be really tall just to get up to my window. Just your mouth to get up to my window, you'd have to be over 6'5", probably. The windows are up pretty high.
Wow.
So I'm pretty sure it was nobody that... I'm pretty sure it was spirit, and we talked about this. That was probably one of my spirit guides kind of giving me a kick in the booty to get moving on some things. Maybe writing my book or that kind of thing, so... That's what I'm thinking.
And how are you doing with that?
Haven't done much recently, but I'm still thinking, working on it a little bit. Still thinking about
That's
it.
That's all right.
I've been too busy lately. I've been very busy lately, and I haven't even been home much of that time.
I know. Yeah, I was just curious, though. Did you get a chapter done so far?
I have a tendency to go back and rewrite everything I do. That's my problem. I go back and I don't like this, I'm rewriting it, this blah, 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 blah. I've changed the title of it several times. So now I want to go with When the Heart Sings, which is a song, when the story about finding love in your heart like you did when you're a little kid. Your heart is just singing, you know, with love and for everybody. That's how I felt as a kid. You asked me at the beginning of this. I felt that way with everybody I met. And I think that's us in our truest state, don't you think, Joy?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It never dawned on me to do anything but greet the world with open arms, ever. And I think that phrase, you know, a little child shall lead the way, I think it's so true. I think it's through us and through because it's the innocence of the child that loves with the open heart. A child only ever comes to earth initially, and in their consciousness, what they're looking at is heaven everywhere, because they hold memories. All your little guy held memories of what that was like, and that's what your mission was, to bring that here through that little form known as Tejas. Absolutely.
Little Tejas.
Yes.
Hey, guess what? Little Tejas.
I suppose he was quite adorable, too.
Who are you talking about?
Imagine that you were a bother for anyone.
No, maybe not. Parents back then, I grew up where kids were meant to be seen but not heard. So.
Oh, yeah.
There were times, my mom was really, she was cool with all that, but my dad, if I started talking too much, he would say, "Shut up," you know. I remember one time I was coming back, we went down to, it's Richland Center, Wisconsin, where he's from, which is in the southern part of the state. And I have this vivid memory. We had an old Chevy, and back then things were different. The laws were different. So I'm standing in the back, not even buckled in. And my mom had asked me, well, what did you think of the trip? Did you have fun? And I'm just going on. I'm all excited. My heart's singing. And I'm going, well, this was great. I saw my cousins. I rode the tractor, blah, blah, blah. And my dad says, shut up. Because he didn't want to hear it anymore. And I sat back down in my seat. And I felt just devastated. And this would repeat itself. Oh. Well, you know, my dad is an awesome being. Not to paint him in any light.
Sure he is.
And so,
no, but it's okay to feel for the little guy in you, too.
I understand.
You know?
But, I mean, it was there. It served a purpose, like everything does. And so,
yes.
While it did suck the life out of me, I found a way to bring it back, you know. And that's, you know, maybe that's the challenge with it, to do that. I mean, I didn't pick my father by accident, right?
No. No, but I think that what he did was, you know, his job for some reason was to put a lid on your excitation, the things that excited you, which to a little child they hear is there's some kind of limitation. Mm-hmm. I'm only allowed to be so happy, you know? And then as an adult, when you grow up and you take responsibility and you make different choices than what your parents gave you at times, it frees you up. So what I hear is that your spirit was crushed.
Yeah.
But then as you grow up, you found ways to set yourself free.
Well, it really was about
a very brave thing.
It really is about coming full circle and finding yourself and having, you know, faith in who you are. And
yes.
So maybe that's what the lesson was all about, is it's an opportunity to be torn away, torn down, and then build yourself back up in a way that's balanced, you know. And, you know, because my mom, she tried to make up for it by, you know, in some ways coddling us a little bit. And that doesn't really help in balance. I mean, she's a wonderful being, but, you know, if you make excuses for kids or anybody and coddle them all the time instead of being straight with them, being honest, compassionate, but honest, right? Then you, in a way, you're enabling that person as well.
Yep.
And my mom, I know she didn't mean to do that, but I knew she would do that. So let's put it this way. In my teenage years, I took advantage. You know, I would skip school, and I'd say, Mom, I fell asleep in the car on the way to school. I was sleeping in the parking lot. Of course, she believed me, and so she'd make an excuse for me. And I was really
I understand. Totally.
You did some of those things?
Boy, do I understand.
You did some of those things, too?
Oh, my God.
Any of you care to...
I literally changed my report card, and... I was like the consummate rebel, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I really was. If I could alter reality in some way, because I didn't really get what people lived anyway, I knew how to get over on my mom. I did. And I did what most kids do.
Right.
But then again, I also know that for those of us that did it to the extreme, those of us that have this inborn hippie in us like we kind of do, you know, the world peace and everything, part of that was important because it brought up the rebel. And in order to be a catalyst for change, you have to be willing to step outside of what people say you should do, you know. And I think you do that quite beautifully, by the way. I think you're a very nice rebel, you know?
Thank you.
And, yeah, and I think your parents really, really nurtured that in you.
I used to not always be the nicest rebel, though. I mean, we all go through phases, and I had a temper and I, as a young guy, and if somebody did something that was wrong, I was not afraid to let them have it and blast them. And I've learned since then that doesn't serve me or serve anybody. Even if somebody is doing something they shouldn't be, you know, there's maybe a better way to go about doing that. Plus, you don't get yourself all worked up, you know. And I've battled that most of my life. I've even had that issue with other people not that long ago, where somebody was deliberately doing something that was driving me nuts. And I just lost mm-hmm. it with that person and basically called them out. And the person certainly changed their tune after that. They towed the line, but it probably was a better way to go about doing that. You know, I've always seen myself as having a warrior spirit. And I've probably lived that way many lifetimes. And so I come here and it's like, I'm not afraid to pull out the sword. Now that sword is made out of cheap rubber, so it just flops. I'm not going to hurt anybody with this foam sword or whatever, yeah. right?
Yes. But I can see that in you. I can see you as a warrior. Mm-hmm. I literally do. I have flashes of you as a warrior. I feel like you were famous, too.
Really?
I feel like you were a famous warrior.
Ah.
Somebody like, what's that Scottish warrior they made the movie about?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I can't think of his name.
You know who I mean.
Right.
What's his name? William Wallace.
William Wallace, yeah.
Yes. Yes. I can feel that in your field. Actually, I felt flashes of that when you were talking. And it's interesting because he was Scottish and he lived off the land. And, you know, he really, he had a great love and he lost her. And, you know, all these sad tales. Have you ever seen his movie?
Oh, yeah. And I even read about him because it really moved my heart. I read about him in history. And
really?
The real William Wallace, yeah. The movie always exaggerates.
Yeah.
It always exaggerates things. But the real story behind it, you know, and what happened to him. And so that, I always, if I'm really into it, I'm going to go and pick it up and dig more and find out. Because movies are, let's face it, you know, Mel Gibson portrayed it a certain way. And it wasn't, it's not 100% accurate.
No, I think they embellished it. But I think the spirit of who he was
right.
part of what came through. And when you talk about those warrior days, it's like I see that in you, but I also feel the warrior in you from that time knows you've come for peace this time.
Right.
So you're approaching things from a different angle. You know, it's fascinating interviewing you.
Is it really?
Oh, it is.
Okay.
You're fascinating.
Okay, if you think so.
For years. Ever since I met you, I said I wanted to interview you.
If you think so.
What?
If you really think so, yeah, that's fine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think you have a very interesting story. And I want to get back to it, okay? What was it that led you into broadcasting? What's the story there? How old were you?
I was just getting out of high school. It was like April 1978. My buddy Lonnie, him and I had no future. I promise you, we could have worked probably construction. I mean, I was a pretty good welder, and I took drafting classes, so I was thinking I would go into that, be a draftsman. And then Lonnie said to me, "Hey, did you get that letter in the mail?" And it was just one word on a piece of paper, broadcasting, with a question mark. And then it said Transamerica School of Broadcasting. And he says, "Hey, we should go down and check that out." And, of course, back then I was, 18 years old, and I liked to party my brains out.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "We can drink ouzo till we go blind all the way down there." Well, not all the way, when we get there and all that. So we went down there and we partied, till we're almost blind. And we met the guys at the school. And they liked us, and they said, "You guys are good enough to do this as a profession." And I thought they were really honestly just after our money, because we both were a couple of, "Hi, my name is so-and-so. How are you? I'm TJ Ryan." How do you tell that somebody's got ability with that? But that's fine. It was something, an opportunity. So they did have some standards. They didn't let everybody in the school. And it really was a good school as far as grading us, and I really took to it, and I really, for the first time in a long time, really busted my backside to do as good a job as I could. And it was about a year of school, and it was a lot of fun, too, because we certainly did our share of partying, and I would drive back home on the weekends once in a while, and I also worked at a grocery store while I was there. So then, after we graduated, I was looking for work in radio and sent out, they call them audition tapes. It's a recording of what you sound like on the air. And since I had never been on the air, we put together these fake audition tapes, which people knew if they were hiring us that we came from a broadcast school. And I sent out a ton of them, and I didn't get any response. So I kept going down to the local radio station in Iron Mountain, and I kept bugging them. The program director. I said, you got any jobs? He goes, I got a part-time job. You can work here part-time. I said, okay. And then eventually, one day I went in there, and he worked mornings, and I said, do you have any positions? He goes, you know what? We're going to have a position because I'm quitting. I'm going to go spin records at the disco, and I no longer am going to do this. So he left his job in radio to be a disco DJ. Well, we all know what happened to disco. He wound up back in radio, but it was an opening for me. And I spent a few years at that radio station. Then I went to Mississippi, and it was a little bigger move. And then I moved back up here in Upper Michigan because I got divorced when I was in Mississippi, and my son lived up here. And there was a good radio station that I knew about up here. And I thought, well, okay, I'll apply to them. And they wanted me to come work for them. And here I've been in radio for this long. And then about 6 years ago, I really felt a strong desire to start doing a podcast. And I had never, I've always been an on-air jock, a guy that, you know, like a top 40 guy, you know the type I'm talking about. You have fun. And
yeah, DJ.
Yeah. And it's fun being on the radio and you kind of, you know, you play music and you talk to people, but that only goes so far in the deeper meaning of life. I can't imagine too many people will tune in and go, boy, that was really deep, that when he talked over the ramp of that song. The ramp is like the beginning part of the song before the vocals. That was really deep, the way Casey Kasem did that. Wow, that moved me. You know, I knew there was something more, and it was like an invisible hand pushing me to step into this. And a friend of mine who was a talk show host even said to me, John, you know who John is, right? You talked to him before. John said, well, you should do this. And I said, I don't want to do that. It's boring. I think talk radio is boring. And so then my friend Eric out of Manistique, he said, well, you know what? It's real easy to do because you can set up a podcast and I'll show you. And of course, you talk to me like you say, well, TJ, I have no idea how to do what you do. I had to learn it as well. I was really illiterate to a lot of it. And he says, just do this and this and this. And next thing I knew, I had a podcast. I started doing a show. It took me a while to learn to be a talk show host and not a top 40 DJ trying to be a talk show okay. host. Yeah. So it became something real natural. And it's a lot of fun. Now I love doing it. And I think I'm doing what I'm meant to do. So here I am. Ta-da.
I do too. I think that's like fascinating that listening to your story from where you started to where you wound up and going through the different phases of your life, though, pretty early on, you were plugged in to that wave of what you were here to do, which is really pretty fascinating. It was like something had you on track very early on.
I've always had this interest in paranormal and had all these things, strange things happen, whether it's UFOs or ghosts or strange vibrations, waking up and having the whole room vibrating, out-of-body experience, whatever, and dreams and all these things. And I've always talked to people about this kind of stuff. So I spent a good part of my life gathering those stories and talking to people. And what was that all for? Why would you do that? Unless maybe there's a time when you share some of those things. It's kind of the way.
Absolutely. So what was your most profound paranormal experience? Speaking of the paranormal, what's the thing, and when you think of the paranormal, that you feel was the thing that really was like, oh, I'll never forget that?
I would have to say in 1992... when I went to my mom's house and I had read about in a book about communicating with aliens or anybody, really, if you want to communicate with somebody, you think about them before you go to bed and you say their name and it helps you connect with them. So I thought, well, if it works for that, maybe it'll work. I've always wanted to see an alien, you know. I think I've seen a couple of UFOs. And so I think I had read Whitley Strieber's book called Communion maybe a few years before that or shortly before that. I thought, well, that'd be pretty cool. And so be careful what you wish for. I am going to bed at my mom's house and I'm thinking about it and repeating it to myself and I doze off. And then I wake up in the middle of the night and one of those is standing there at the foot of my bed and it's just, I can't even move. It's like my physical body has been shut down. It's like I'm paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
And then a thought hit me. He won't hurt you if you don't wish to hurt him. Now, where did that thought come from? And I thought, I thought to myself, well, no, I just wanted to see him. And when I thought that is when I was able to move, and he kind of like let go of me. It's like he was controlling me. And then he kind of, okay, you're not going to hurt me. I'll let you start moving around a little bit. And he was right only about 3 or 4 feet away from me at the foot of my bed on the right-hand side. So, I mean, I could have practically kicked my foot, you know, and hurt him. He looked very frail. He looked like what they call the gray beings, the ones with the big eyes and the slender bodies and kind of the big head. And so I really think he was communicating with me, and I think he was there to show me that he existed because I asked for it. And that probably is one of the most, I think, one of the coolest things that's ever happened that I've experienced.
Wow. When you looked at his face, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did he look like he had emotion?
No, I can't say they did. He had big black eyes, almond-shaped eyes, and just, you know, I do feel like, you know, people have said different things about this, too. I don't know if you talk to people that are abductees or whatever, but some people have said that they're devastated by these things and they have no emotion. But I did sense something from him. And I mean, it's been a while since this experience, but I really did sense that he was a being of compassion because he easily could have just made my life miserable. And once he realized I had no intention and I understood the rules of engagement between us, he gave me the freedom to move again. And I really think that they have the ability to shut you down with a thought. They can, they're so advanced in their thinking that they can put a thought in your head and you cannot move. And I mean, some people might,
yeah, they understand telepathy.
Right. And so,
yeah,
I just feel that it was a being, you know, I've heard other people, there was a really good friend of mine. I shouldn't call him a really good friend. I've only talked to him a few times, but I feel like he's a brother. His name is Jim Maroney. He's from Canada. And he had an experience with them, and they took him in 1987 out of a truck stop. They took him, and I interviewed Jim a couple of years ago. But he said when they left, you know, at first he was terrified, but when they left him, he started crying because of, he realized they talked to him, and they told him all these things, and there was this incredible connection. And the love, he really felt there was love from them. And there was actually a woman that I interviewed locally that went through the same thing. So, you know, I believe there is a force out there that is working in our best interest. And there may be those that don't, but I think there's actually like a galactic. Remember Star Trek? You ever watch that?
Yep.
There's like a...
Yes, I did.
A federation.
It's funny. I was never drawn to Star Trek, but I was taken up in a ship. But, you know, it wasn't because I didn't have preconceived ideas about, like, from Star Trek.
You were taken up in a ship. Why don't you tell us that story, mister? You talk about me being having an interesting story. Well, your story is pretty interesting.
Well, I was house-sitting out in North Carolina, and... It was 3 o'clock in the morning, and during that time I was traveling the country doing readings and all kinds of stuff. And, I was directed to go to, North Carolina, and I spiritually, I was told to, the ones with no names said to go there through a reading with Flo. And while I was out there, I stayed at this house, this very wealthy lady who had, a swimming pool in the backyard. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, I heard this noise. Now, there were these stories about bears, and I was kind of isolated in this house, but I thought, well, I should go and check it out. And I go in the backyard, and there in the swimming pool, I see this groundhog literally doing the backstroke in this pool. Mm. And as soon as I saw it, I started laughing. It was hysterical. And immediately, this light dropped around me. And when I came to now, I've had different flashes of memories over the years, but when I came to, I had hummingbirds spiraling in front of my face. And just this year, for a long time, I thought I was only gone like overnight, and I had the realization that I was gone for a few days. And but the thing was, I had these experiences where they were teleporting me places and showing me things and training me. And it's interesting because some of the spiritual work I do something called grid work. And I was never trained, but when I came back from that experience, I had a deeper understanding. I had some knowledge of it, you know, because I've channeled and I get energy, but when I came back, I had a more profound understanding and a deeper wisdom about what it was and how it could work in the world and what to do globally with grids and all this kind of thing. And I truly feel they were training me. Mm. Because then I wound up sharing it with people. And I sometimes will do a grid or train somebody to do a grid when I'm asked to do so. But that's just one area. And I learned about, you know, that we hear the stories of inner earth beings. And during that trip, I was taken into the inner earth. I saw beings inside of mountains that were, oh, God knows how tall. But when I came back, like I said, I wasn't afraid. I felt like I was being taught. Not programmed, but taught.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very different.
Right. And that's what a lot of people have told me that have had experiences where they were taken, is that some of them really feel they were being shown things so there would come a day maybe at some point
mm-hmm.
when that would be applied.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand of, well, you can look at all the beings that are around us helping us, whether it's angels or spirit guides or spirit, they tread very gently around us. And I think, you know, if you want to talk about multidimensional beings, they probably have the mm-hmm. same respect for our life as well. That's why they don't show up and go, here we are, here's how it goes. Mm-hmm. It's more of,
yeah.
And we have to agree to that too. I mean, at some level, that's what we came to experience. So,
yes, I feel that it's higher intelligence, and I've also had them work on me with health issues. Periodically, I've known that it was through galactic information or healing that certain things would shift. So there's it's like anything else, though. When you look at our planet, we have people that act lovingly and act from love, and then we have people that act from fear and do horrible things. Well, I feel it's the same way in our planetary. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's not like you can say, oh, ETs are all this or ETs are all that. They're not, you know. I think part of it has to do with your vibration, what your choices are, and what you allow as to what's going to occur when you interact with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think part of that also, you know, because there are people that have had, there's a lot of interaction with the grays, what they call the grays. And mm-hmm. some people are very frightened because they're taken and things are done to them and then they're returned. But there are people that are, like I've talked to already, that have had incredible experiences, very loving experiences. So I look at it as every different group is, they're all different. And the thing with like the grays is they're very intelligent. And they, from what was explained to me by other sources, is that they don't have a lot of emotion. And they don't understand why we get upset, because it's part of an agreement. You agreed to do this before you came here. What's the big deal? You know, mm-hmm. That's part of the mentality behind it. And so what they've been doing with some of our people, I believe, is probably trying to breed that emotion back in, because they took it out maybe a long time ago because it didn't serve them. They thought it didn't serve them. And now they've come to realize it does serve them, and they want to have some of that.
Yeah.
And so that's what they're doing.
The heart.
They want to bring some of that in. Go ahead.
Yes. And I feel like the whole crossbreeding thing, well, they say the Mayans were the first ones to crossbreed with the ETs. I think it was Edgar Cayce who said that. And I had a memory of that even before I read it. And then I read it right after I remembered it. But it was the Mayans that first experienced that kind of interaction as far as crossbreeding, I think, with trying to produce life in certain ways. And it's interesting because I really feel that what they discovered was, this is just my sense with the Greys, that they had this feeling that if you had a heart, you'd be weak, you'd be susceptible to the human experience, you'd have reaction. But I think along the way, in their own evolution, they discovered that the heart is the point of power, because it's the place you can produce life from, you can raise frequency from there with love, you can, you know. So at least that's my perception mm-hmm. of what I see. It's interesting stuff, though. So, and now getting back to your interview, you're really good at that. See,
what's
this
that?
Is part of the reason why I wanted to interview you. I had a feeling you'd pull those tricks
no,
on
no,
me.
No, there's no
see
tricks.
How long I'd fall.
No tricks at all. I just see when you bring up something, I've got to inquire about it because you brought up the story.
I
well,
if
you want to, you know, we've got to find out about it, right?
But see, we could do this all day.
Right.
But I just wonder, though, now, after you had that experience, mm-hmm. was that the only one you ever wanted to have with them?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I haven't really desired it or tried to do it.
Once was enough, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it proved to me. I mean, I certainly would like to communicate with them more, and maybe I am. Maybe I'm doing it telepathic, you know? But I don't dwell on it. I used to really dwell on those kind of things. And now, you know, now it's not as big a deal to me. You know, some people get caught in the UFO mentality and that's all they care about.
Mm-hmm.
They go to all the conventions and I think they miss the bigger picture. Not to offend anybody, but it's like there's all kinds of things going on. And why limit yourself to just one area when there's only so much you can talk about. You know, well, we so-and-so saw this, and that's great. You saw a craft. That's nice. But where does that take us? Tons of people saw crafts. I think I'm glad they did. I'm glad they talk about them. But at some point, there's going to be contact, and there's also going to be release of information. That's what I think is really cool.
Yeah. Stuff. And I think what you're saying is so very valid. It's like, what's the bigger picture? What's the mm-hmm. message?
The same with people that do ghost hunting.
Dramatizing.
People really get into the ghost hunting, and they want to talk about spirits, and it's like, that's all they seem to live for. And it's like, I think it's interesting a little bit, but you and I both know there's so much more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So much more. So, you know, it's now 2:30, so mm-hmm. technically our time is up.
Yes, I guess
but
so.
I think that's a great question to leave with for today.
Hmm.
I want to thank you for being not only my co-host, but a truly interesting interview. This was fun. I hope you come on again. And let me interview you again, and
sure.
I look forward to co-hosting with you.
Same here, and you know, I've got to interview you one of these days again, too, don't you think?
If you must.
I must.
Okay, I actually, I I love to come on and be interviewed by you because you make people feel very comfortable. So that's one of your gifts. So thank you for the invite, and I will take you up on it.
Well, thank you, Joyous One.